IDC Radio. 106.2 FM. 106.2 FM.
What is up, guys? My name is Eliezer Lev. I'm here in the IDC International Radio Station, and I'm here with my good friends Ezra Snookle.
What's up, guys?
Daniel Dolphin.
How y'all doing?
And Mendel Zlotnick.
Salutations.
So, you have tuned into Real Life. Now, that is R-E-E-L, Life, because in this podcast, we talk about movies, we talk about TV, we talk about what they mean to the world. We talk about what they mean to us and what they can mean to you.
Specifically, you guys, we want you to be part of those conversations and we want you to be part of this world.
We don't just do this for our own ego.
I mean, we kind of do, but also feel free to reach out through Instagram or Twitter.
Yeah. I mean, become the movie buffs we know you can be.
Exactly. That's what we want to do. We want to create movie buffs as well as we can.
Like a movie buff factory.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what we're going to be.
Like a sweatshop.
Exactly. We are a movie buff sweatshop right here. So this week, we all watched our favorite Quentin Tarantino movie, the king of just weird.
Director, storytelling, just everything. Wow.
Like, the definition of weird works.
Right.
Because, like, it works. Like, his stuff is masterpieces.
They're weird masterpieces.
It's all art, and it's just crazy. He has such a unique style of storytelling and just incredible.
And everyone can enjoy his movies.
Except unless, like, you don't like blood, but...
Spoiler alert, there's blood.
And cursing.
Yeah. It's true.
There are people who don't like it.
It's like, shit, now I can't watch it.
Talking of bad language in a movie, Ezra, why don't you take it off?
All right. So I picked my favorite, even though it may not be known as the best. It's definitely up there as a fantastic movie, but, you know, with a director like Quentin... it's pretty competitive, you know. I went with my favorite, Django Unchained, directed and written by, you know, Quentin Tarantino,
the big man on campus.
Really?
Yeah. Now, before I get into it, I think I want to set the tone with my opinion of three things that make a Tarantino movie.
Okay.
I think it's got to go with historical fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think a lot of the movies fall lately have definitely been falling into the historical fiction.
They definitely follow
category.
That trend of, at least, like, for example, Kill Bill, which wasn't necessarily historical fiction, but the vast majority of his movies are something along those lines.
All right, then you got the wild, bloody, even some might call it gory action.
Mm-hmm.
And last but definitely not least, great scripts and great storytelling.
I have to add one thing. I agree with all three of those. I have to say the fourth characteristic of his movies is the change in, like, chronological order, like time, and the different perspectives of each person.
Okay,
agrees.
I mean, I don't.
That's a huge part of him.
I don't necessarily think that that is such a big point in the movie that I chose.
Not necessarily you. I meant more as for Quentin Tarantino.
So you're explaining your take why it falls in, but in mine, I think the first three are definitely evident. But definitely the great script. I think one of the I think of the modern directors. You know, when you think of people who direct films or write films with excellent, amazing monologues, you know, immediately Quentin Tarantino always comes to mind.
Yeah.
Especially the films that consist of the great, articulate, and possibly the most smooth-talking actor, Christoph Waltz.
Yeah.
Wow. Phenomenal.
Christoph Waltz as Dr. King Schultz has some of the best scenes in which I wouldn't necessarily say he's body acting, but it's really just acting with the mouth, like how he articulates things, how he says things, how he explains things to other characters. You know, it's, you know, most notably the opening scene, really, where he wishes to purchase, you know, the title character Django from a bunch of slavers. And later on, when he explains to Django what his true profession is, which is as a bounty hunter. In the Civil War era. And so, you know, I think it also pairs especially nicely with the title character Django, portrayed by Jamie Foxx, who's excellent.
We love Jamie Foxx.
Perfectly cast.
Who's definitely got some nice lines, but they're a bit more like one-liners, and he's a bit more action star to Dr. King Schultz, to Christoph Waltz's, you know, smooth-talking, nice guy, but I'm going to kill you later. Dr. King Schultz, the bounty hunter.
Right.
And yeah, you know, it's just, you know, you wouldn't think that words are necessarily the most entertaining thing to watch, but when it's written by such a talented guy and, you know, read or acted by such a talented actor, it's you know, must watch film, must watch
cinema.
Definitely
fantastic, yeah.
Going back to the first point I made, which is historical fiction. For those who don't know, the movie Django Unchained takes place in the Civil War era. Quick summary. It's about, I don't want to ruin the movie. It's about, you know, Dr. King Schultz, who by day he's a dentist, but by night and also by day he is a bounty hunter, killing wanted men, yeah. A lot of slave traders and other...
Not traders. Slave trading was legal then.
Right. So then what was it again?
It was...
How would you explain it?
Like, just robbers, stagecoach... Like, specifically stagecoach
right.
robbers.
But it was also guys who would illegally right. take, like, black guys from the
like
north.
Kidnappers,
and, like, kidnap them and that sort of stuff. Any illegal thing he got involved in.
Exactly.
But no, I'm just, like, on, like, a less serious note, imagine you just chilling in your dentist chair... And this guy, like, oh, what did you do this weekend? He's like, oh, well, I traveled to, you know, the neighboring state, yeah. You know, shot a couple guys in the head, you know.
Well, that's
shoved my fist
practice.
down some guy's yeah. throat and ripped out his, like, tongue.
Yeah.
And he's busy working in your mouth and you shitting your pants.
Anyways, yeah, absolutely. But anyways, he proclaims and he buys Django because he has come to the understanding that Django... is one of the only people in the South who knows the identity or is able to recognize a particular target of his.
The
Brittle Brothers. Anyways, so what's so fantastic about this movie is that he takes a genre or more an era, which is, in my opinion, one of the, if not the most fascinating and almost, I don't want to say entertaining, but interesting times of American history. And, you know, frankly, before him, there weren't a ton of movies about the Civil War, you know? If you're going to say 50 Years a Slave, it came out the year after this movie.
I wasn't going to say that. I was saying, I mean, the movie isn't really based around the Civil War. It's really mainly about slavery,
yeah.
which was really before
it's
the
mostly,
Civil War.
I think this was the movie that really brought like historical slavery
exactly.
into the limelight. You know, explained
yeah.
it from every possible perspective because that's what Quentin Tarantino
exactly.
does.
Exactly,
he revamps
like
things.
He gives you the opportunity to sympathize and hopefully you don't sympathize with them, but to sympathize with any and every actor. You could see their standpoints. You could see what they're thinking. You understand their
you could
actions
sympathize.
And stuff.
I don't think
yeah.
you could sympathize. With every actor, for example, Leonardo DiCaprio,
yeah,
and
like,
Samuel L. Jackson.
I don't sympathize with
the
slave
yeah.
trader because, like,
they're the epitome of racism. They're
that's bad.
You know, yeah,
that's bad.
It's very, very bad. But yeah, so. You know, it's he definitely portrays the cruelty of the era, which is something you know needs that a light needs to be shed on. Like, it was
yeah.
a really terrible time for a particular people of the world. And, you know, especially with modern day, you know, issues, it definitely is a, you know, important thing to reflect on and see,
yeah.
you know, why people bring such issues to the light.
I think that it's more important. I think about it. How many people have fallen asleep in history class? How many people couldn't be bothered to pick up the
no,
book?
Absolutely.
And
I personally
how many
love
people
history.
Follow? How many people are following all this stuff on the internet that they don't know if it's true or false, you know, fake news and all that bullshit. And then suddenly you've got a movie, whether it's true, whether it's false, it gives you a very big picture about what slavery was like,
yeah.
what the certain components were. And even if it leaves out certain details, you're still able to formulate your own opinions of, you know, obviously
yeah.
discussed
I mean,
towards that era.
But anyways, you know, just to sum it up, I didn't want to give up too much because especially in this particular episode, I think these are the kinds of movies that people really need to see because it is not only a great movie, you know, from the present era, but it definitely is a movie that also, you know, represents like what cinema and directing and screenwriting has been culminating, you know, from decade to decade. And it is a fantastic, fantastic film. And so, yeah, I just wanted to bring those points that, you know, historical fiction talks about a really interesting and also, you know, vicious time in American history, There's some fantastic action with some smooth talking Jamie Foxx, some fantastic monologues by Leonardo DiCaprio and, of course, Christoph Waltz, all written by the, you know, talented Quentin Tarantino. And I think that's the point why I picked Tarantino, is because to me, I think he is one of, if not the best film writers, let alone directors, mm-hmm. in modern cinema.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, do have to say, though,
yeah,
just because you're bringing up Django, and between that and The Hateful Eight, there were a lot of people that it was very controversial for them. The amount of times the N-word is used, for example.
Yeah. Yeah.
And people, they went up to Samuel Jackson in an interview and was like, do you feel comfortable working with a racist? And I love Sam's response. It was, you cannot be a racist. It is impossible to be a racist and write black characters as amazingly as he does. You might hate Sam Jackson in Django, but he was by far the smartest person around. Like, yeah. mm-hmm. he was the one who saw through all the bullshit. He saw through it all in all of his movies. Like Sam yeah. plays like a powerful character.
Exactly. There's a difference between there's a difference between historical representation and accuracy, and not like, you know, lightening up. Like, he really wanted to say, like, you know, this time people were racist. People, you know, spoke that way. People treated people like this. Like this, mm-hmm. he wanted to give that cinematic feel. We are really going back into the pre-Civil War era. Which only shines a light on said characters like, you know, Christoph Waltz's Dr. King Schultz and Jamie Foxx's Django, that whilst bounty hunting may not be the, you know, the holiest and loftiest of professions, they're still, by clear definition, the protagonists of this film. Like, they're definitely the good guys, even though their job is to kill people or maliciously hurt people for money.
Yeah. Yeah. So, listen, you were talking about Samuel L. Jackson, and you were talking about, obviously, Quentin Tarantino, the topic. So I want to bring in my Quentin Tarantino movie. I went with his 2009 war action movie, Inglourious Bastards.
Wow. Beautiful movie.
Also wow. a great movie. Also a great movie.
Honestly, every
strikes
time I see it...
Strikes close to home.
Yeah, every time I see it, I see it, I feel like, you know, like, just wow. I love the characters, love the things, but I want to specifically talk less about the movie, more about Quentin Tarantino himself.
Yeah.
See a little bit of a pattern. First and foremost, you mentioned Samuel Jackson. Samuel Jackson narrates Inglourious Basterds.
That's right.
Yeah. He's the narrator in Inglourious Basterds. And one of my favorite characters, Hans Lander, the SS officer, is mm-hmm. played by Christoph Waltz. So we mentioned before that he's got like an absolutely beautiful take and interpretation on how to portray cinema.
Right.
And we see that obviously Quentin Tarantino, he knows what he's doing. And he bases a lot of his influence influence, what convinced him to get into this into the style of writing, into the style of screenplay, and it was by Sergio Leone. Sergio Leone was a director who did The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do side-by-side comparisons of Inglourious Basterds and not even Inglourious Basterds, any of Quentin Tarantino's movies, you do side-by-side comparisons between Sergio's work and Quentin's work, you see a lot of similarities. Yeah. You know, the opening scene, the bad guy and a bad guy and a good guy sit down, there's an interrogation followed by a shootout.
It's hilarious that you bring up Sergio Leone, because I almost, in my take, I was about to say, it was on the tip of my tongue, to call Django a spaghetti western. But it's not a spaghetti western.
So
it is a spaghetti western, except it doesn't take place in the West. It takes place in the South. A spaghetti western is traditionally a movie that takes place in the Wild West. Yeah. But it is that theme of movie. It is that kind of movie. So, you know, thanks for bringing that.
I mean, it's classified as a spaghetti
western. So, they say that this is also like a spaghetti west with Inglourious Basterds, but I feel like what he does in cinema, where he brings that forward, where he's able to portray Sergio's style of writing so well, is fantastic. In fact, Sergio makes a not Sergio. There was another writer of Inglourious Basterds. There was an Inglourious Basterds in 1974, if I'm not mistaken. His name is Enzo G. Castellari.
He's the director.
He was the Italian director that produced that made Inglourious Basterds in 1978.
Right.
That was my bad. And basically, Quentin Tarantino's film is a remake of that. And this guy Enzo actually has a cameo in it. Funny enough, so does Quentin Tarantino. He also has a cameo in the movie. He's the first German to be sculpted by the Bastards. Now, just to give you a bit of background, not to go too much into the movie, Inglourious Bastards is based on these eight characters, these eight Jewish-American soldiers called the Bastards. Now, they're the Bastards because they literally go and they fuck the Germans up repeatedly.
Led by the one.
To the point that there's...
The only Brad Pitt.
So, Brad Pitt... On his overall star-studded cast, but Brad Pitt,
known to the Germans as Aldo the Apache,
you owe me 100 Nazi scalps.
Aldo the Apache, Lieutenant Aldo Rain, he is so obsessed with fucking Nazis up, with destroying them. There's so many scenes of them doing it, and he even has a thing where he's like, "Oh, I'm gonna spare you. I'm going to spare you," because he needs to spare certain guys so that they could spread the fear of God into the rest of the Nazi
lines. The fear of the bastards.
But, the fear of the bastards. But he says, and it's very iconic, he says, once the war's over, you could take off that uniform and pretend like none of this happened. And I'm not going to let that happen. I'm going to make sure that there's something you can't take off. And he carves a swastika into these guys' foreheads.
I kind of wish that some of those guys that, managed to escape to South America.
Yeah, they had the Nazi things on their forehead.
Be a little easier for Israel to
be
to
like,
catch
hey,
them.
That's unique. Yeah. So...
Birthmark.
Like I said, the bastards go around and they're causing havoc. We actually get scenes where you've got like Hitler, who is also like, going nuts at these guys. And the movie is basically about assassination attempts on Hitler. Two assassination attempts. One, obviously, the failed briefcase, and the second one being in the cinema. And the second main character in this movie, her name
more
is
like the second
Shoshana.
Plotstein.
It's like the two roads that are eventually going to meet is a girl called Shoshana. She is a Jew who has fled to France, and she has changed her name, and she runs a theater. And she is met by the actor Daniel Brühl, playing Frederick Zoller. Mm-hmm. For Marvel fans,
later plays Arnim Zola. Baron Zemo, not Zola.
Baron Zemo.
Zola's the doctor.
Like Z's, like Z's, like me, Zlati.
Also, he's got to
mention
something.
What?
How important Shoshana is?
I'm getting there. She's getting like hit on very creepily by this guy Frederick Zola, who is a war hero, like a sniper hero, and. The reason, and he basically wants to have a movie that, like, he actually takes it. We bring in like a lot of realistic characters, like Goebbels, and you see that Hitler's there. You got Churchill. You got guys who are like main characters at that time, and basically, so Zola takes her to Goebbels to, get permission so that they can have the movie in her theater because he's in love with this chick.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually they do a tour of it, they do an inspection, and they get the go-ahead. And the rest of the plot I'll leave for you guys to see and to decide for yourself. Right. But there was one concept that I wanted to go in, because we're mentioning all these characters. And don't forget, this is fiction. This isn't it's not a real historical story.
Yeah.
The Bastards never existed. But the characters in them, like these main characters, are real people. I think the main point over here is the theme that cinema wins the war.
Right.
Quentin Tarantino is a masterpiece at cinema. He really knows what he's doing, and he thinks that his powerful punch that he's holding in his hand, his movies that he's holding in his hand, the powerful punch that they portrays is portrayed in this movie, because the whole thing is about a movie that's going to be aired, and they're going to use that as an excuse to try and kill Hitler. And if you notice, like in the movies at that time, historically, there was mad amount of Nazi propaganda before each film came out. And obviously, it's in this film as well. And the ending scene of the movie is Shoshana coming on the screen and giving her take, basically calling a whole bunch of like nasty names to the Nazis, being like, it's literally like, in short, being like, fuck you, you cunts, you stupid German bastards, you Nazis. assholes. And she goes, and then boom, the whole place goes up in smoke. Not much of a spoiler, because most people know that about the movie. The more fun part about the movie is the build up.
Uh-huh.
The build up of this movie is way more exciting than the climax. Just because you're falling in love with characters as things are going along, and Quentin Tarantino is not afraid to axe them, not afraid to just have someone get him.
He really is not afraid to press the boundaries.
Yeah, and he will, He will take things to the absolute extreme, and just with his overall capabilities of portraying the strength of cinema on his screen, I think that for me that's the most beautiful thing that he can do.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, guys. So for my movie, I went with Pulp Fiction. I think, yeah, just it's just one of the most perfect films.
This is like the time where I'm embarrassed because I have not seen Pulp Fiction.
It's ridiculous. I don't get how.
I have, and like it's not in the genre that I normally watch. I saw this when I was much younger. Normally would never watch that, and I loved it. That was the first time that I watched a movie that I had like an appreciation for cinema, not just the story, not just the, you know, the feelings. This is like, oh my God, this is a good movie.
So, I mean, like, it wasn't this wasn't portrayed so much in this movie, but what I did want to talk about with Quentin Tarantino is his, like, of how he gives the different perspectives of everybody, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Like, you talked about Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah.
And how Frederick Zoller was the hero for Germany, right?
Yeah.
And then you have Aldo the Apache, who was the hero for America, but the Germans hated him and thought he was terrible. And I spoke about this back from the first episode when I brought up Aladdin, like, everybody being the hero in their own stories.
Yeah.
And I think it's so tough to portray that well. And that's one thing I have to say I have so much respect for him about. Like,
100% agree.
He is one of the best storytellers alive.
100%.
Now, Pulp Fiction. There's so much going on. It's just like a mashup of crazy, crazy stuff. They're changing times. They're changing perspectives. There's different plots going on. And at the end, they all connect. And it's just amazing because you'll see these things that happen that in the middle of the movie, they'll be talking about, is this divine intervention versus is this coincidence? And it keeps on happening and happening and happening. And, like, then you have Samuel Jackson quoting the Bible like a beast, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, just all of it, just incredible.
Uh-huh.
So it's one of those movies that, like, it gives you something to think about. Like, like coincidence versus divine intervention. And, like, I just think it's so tough
to elaborate a bit more on this divine intervention versus coincidence debate?
All right. One of the first scenes, Samuel Jackson, John Travolta, they get shot at close range.
Like, open a full magazine.
No. I mean, they're shooting a revolver. Three rounds went off. All right. These guys were standing next to each other. About 15 feet away, the guy was popping off shots. We were all in the army. Not that hard to shoot that close, right?
Yeah. No, he emptied the revolver.
No, it was three shots. I watched it today, I'm telling you.
Three? Oh.
All right.
Okay, my bad.
And he missed all three. Like, that shouldn't happen.
Yeah.
All right? Like, it was from, like, one room in an apartment to the other
but
end of the
room. But is that a plot hole, or did he intend for that to happen?
No, it was intended to happen, because they talk about the divine intervention.
The gun that was supposed to shoot Samuel Jackson on set didn't hit him. Whoops. No, it was the plot.
No, I'm saying, he intended. Okay.
No, the guy was trying to kill them.
The guy who shot them.
And it was divine intervention versus coincidence. It was things like that. And, like, just bad luck or good luck just keep on happening to these guys. And all this, like, it wiles up, it just moves around so much, but it comes back to the same, like, thing, which is this argument, which it's like, but it's still original every time. It's not like he wasn't getting lazy. He was so creative with how he did all of this. And, like, you know, you got Samuel Jackson with his impeccable lines at the end of the movie. I mean, you two saw it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, when the robber, when Tim Roth, who's robbing the joint, the diner, when he's asking which wallet is his, because Samuel Jackson, you know, he's not getting robbed. He's got a gun to this guy's face.
Right.
So he's like, which wallet is yours? He's like, the one that says bad motherfucker on it. And you're just like, he whips it out and says, it's just like a leather wallet that says bad motherfucker.
That's literally Samuel Jackson's, like, key phrase.
They sell those wallets. Like, it's just insane.
Yeah, it is.
There's just so much going on. Stacked cast. It revitalized John Travolta's acting career, you know, this movie.
Yeah.
Who was this cast?
All right, you ready? You got Uma Thurman. Very common in his movies. Quentin Tarantino was in there for a scene. Yeah. John Travolta, one of the main characters. Samuel Jackson, Holy Grail. You got Bruce Willis, you know.
Your boy.
He's Butch.
Butch.
Yeah.
Mr. Die Hard.
It's either Brad Pitt or Bruce Willis. What can we say?
Yeah. All right, you got Harvey Keitel, Beast. Christopher frickin' Walken.
Bro.
All right. He comes in as a war hero.
More
like
cowbell.
Wow.
See that again?
Just
you got Tim Roth, Steve Buscemi. You got like real actors in here.
Yeah.
You got
not
guys
star-studded
who really care.
Cast. Yeah,
yeah, but it's also not just for the sake of having them.
Yeah,
they because a lot of these lines they honestly sounded quirky, and like me and my roommate were talking about it today about how like the acting, while it's not necessarily the best. But at the same time, it's so perfect based on how it's written and how the story is playing out. And like then you just have crazy Easter eggs thrown in there. Like they have a katana from Kill Bill made by the same sword maker. I think his name is, one sec,
It's like it's almost as if Quentin Tarantino has his own like little universe going on.
It's literally a multiverse.
Yeah.
All right, he's got his own thing going on, and it's just insane. And
but that's another pattern in the movie is that he's got these especially critically acclaimed casts, very popular, you know, star actors, and they're not just there for face value. They're there because they give off killer performances, albeit having minor screen time.
Yeah, like they really just they capture the scene which whenever they're in these.
Yeah. By the way, there was one thing that I wanted to say earlier when you mentioned how they like all split scenes that seem to have like no relevance to each other whatsoever, but
and
then they
connect.
Then they connect.
Makes me think of Seinfeld.
The concept of interconnectivity with his movies is completely outstanding. First and foremost, because you see, like we said, with the Easter eggs and the interconnectivity between other movies, but also within the movie itself. Everyone loves to be able to close their mind and imagine what the hell is going on in their movie, to let their imagination run wild a little bit. And it's very difficult to portray in movies. It's easy to do in books because you're picturing it yourself.
Because it's all in your mind.
Yeah, but in movies, you've actually got a picture of it. So how can you do it? No, Quentin Tarantino manages to accomplish that by you being able to try and piece the whole story together in your head, trying to understand what's going on, let your imagination run wild, and then boom, slap you with the reality
of
what's going on.
Shout out to the Hateful Eight.
Yeah.
Oh, great
bro,
movie.
Bro, same. It's just insane how he manages to capture this. Insane God.
So, I took a relatively controversial pick with a Tarantino movie because it's not...
They're all pretty controversial.
No, but like controversial as to his best. Because a lot of people...
But we're not here to discuss best. We're here to discuss your favorite.
That's true. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Okay. All right.
Another movie with a stacked cast.
In my opinion.
The same stacked cast as always.
Just
except you got Margot Robbie.
Beautiful, beautiful movie.
Yeah.
Okay? Granted, it has a 7.6 on IMDb, 85 on Rotten Tomatoes, but, you know, it's still magnificent. Like we said, there is a gorgeous cast. You have Leonardo DiCaprio as Rick Dalton. You have Brad Pitt as Cliff Booth.
Can I just say one thing about that?
Yeah.
You brought up Cliff Booth, and you also spoke about Lieutenant Rain. They're both played by Brad Pitt.
Yeah, Alder Rain and Cliff
Booth. Yeah, so when I'm bored, I generally just read movie facts sometimes, right? One of them that came up was Cliff Booth is Lieutenant Aldo's son.
Whoa.
It's in the same universe. It's his son.
For real?
Yeah, it's just wild.
I mean, it adds up. Inglourious Basterds is in the 40s, and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is in the 60s.
It does make sense, but like Brad Pitt is Brad Pitt's son. That's hilarious.
So continuing on, Margot Robbie as Sharon Tate, just phenomenal actress.
Also just stunning.
No, I'm saying Sharon Tate as well. Both Margot and Sharon Tate, beautiful. A breakout performance, honestly, my favorite performance, even though she only has like three scenes, but Julia Butters as Trudy Frazier. Okay, she plays the little girl on one of Rick Dalton's sets.
Okay.
And she's super method. It is adorable and it is hilarious. You also have Al Pacino as Marvin Schwarz, who's Rick Dalton's agent. I'm not going to go into all of the cast, but that's some of the big name players. But pretty much what Once Upon
Each
a
of
Time...
them is enough for their own movie, never
exactly,
mind a movie together.
So... What the description for the movie is a faded...
You mentioned DiCaprio, right?
Of course you did, first and foremost.
A faded television actor and his stunt double strive to achieve fame and success in the final years of Hollywood's golden age in 1969 LA. Now, 1969, you have a lot of hippies, okay? There's just a crap ton of hippies. And we see Brad Pitt's character, Cliff Booth, dealing with... some hippies who have kind of taken advantage of his old friend, George Spann, who's played by Bruce Dern. And like they kind of have this abandoned set that was George's set, and they kind of live there for free. They like ride horses and like give tours. And that's one plot point. Then you have the Rick Dalton plot point.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Rick is a... like I said, he's a faded television actor. And what's brilliant that Tarantino did, actually, there's a scene where Rick Dalton and Cliff Booth are watching some of Rick's stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And Quentin Tarantino actually he edited Rick Dalton into some actual Western TV. which is phenomenal. I can't remember what show they were watching, but it was like, it's just phenomenal movie making.
The amount of work they put into these.
Yeah, that's just insane.
Insane. And we see Rick Dalton really struggle. Like, Al Pacino meets up with him. Marvin Schwarz meets with him and is kind of like, you're being a villain in all these stories. You are going to be portrayed as a villain, like, in real life. And we need to work on your image because otherwise you will just fade. So he goes to, I think it was Italy or something.
Goes to Italy.
He does a bunch of spaghetti westerns there as the hero. He comes back to America. He's working on another show as a villain with this Trudy Frazier actress. And like there's one scene, it's riveting, where they're on set and Rick keeps messing up his lines. And like, to an actor, that's like the worst thing you can do because, you know, you're showing that you're not professional. So he goes back to his trailer. He's beating himself up. There's a scene where he's like yelling at the mirror, like literally like, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
And like he blames his drinking. He blames his smoking. Like it's Leonardo DiCaprio was told, go into this trailer, have a mental breakdown, and like, we'll film it. Like, it's just insane. And then he goes back out and he's sitting, he's doing a scene where he kidnaps Trudy Frazier's character in the show. Mm-hmm. And like she's holding herself to a really high standard. Like, she doesn't break character on set, like nothing. And after the scene, she whispers in Rick Dalton's ear, she says, "That was the greatest acting I have ever seen in my entire life." And you see Rick Dalton start to tear up, and it's so heartwarming. And you see his like kind of move back into good acting in TV.
Which is not something you get from a lot of Quentin Tarantino movies, that right. feeling of like feeling yeah. good.
And then we have our third plot line, which is the Sharon Tate plot line, where we see Margot Robbie playing Sharon Tate, and she lives next door to Rick Dalton. And they don't intersect at all until like the very, very end. But we see her going on her life with her multiple husbands at different times and like kind of seeing what the world thinks of Sharon Tate. Mm-hmm. And there's one scene where she goes to the movie theater mm-hmm. to watch a movie that she's in. Like, she's running some errands. She sees a theater's playing her movie. So she's like, you know what? I'll go in. And at first, they don't recognize her. They're like, you have to buy a ticket. And she's like, but I'm in the movie. And then the owner of the theater comes out. He's like, oh, Sharon, come in, please. And like, you see her sitting there, like, doing the fight choreography in the stands. But what's really crazy is that Sharon Tate actually, she had passed away a little bit, not a little bit ago, a while ago. And they left the original, movie. That like they were saying that Margot Robbie's Sharon Tate played in, like they left that instead of doing what they did with Rick Dalton and putting
and
him
editing
into
it, yeah,
which is brilliant. And her story is really kind of like a side point, but we see just phenomenal acting from yeah. Margot Robbie. Now we see that like the friendship between Rick Booth, Rick Dalton and Cliff Booth, really like present in this movie because Rick Dalton is struggling and he's like dealing with alcoholism and like just he's not doing well.
Mm-hmm. So so Leo is playing himself
pretty much.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. He's incredible. Nah, I'm kidding. Nah.
He's amazing.
I hope he doesn't listen to this.
He's not gonna listen to this.
And Cliff Booth is his best friend and stunt double who pretty much takes care of him. Mm-hmm. And we see like Brad drive Leonardo DiCaprio's like car, like driving him around because he has too many DUIs and he can't actually drive by himself anymore.
Yeah.
And so he drives him from set to home and from home to set and wherever he needs to go. And then like he gets in his like dusty old pickup truck and drives to his trailer park. Like you show how amazing of a man Cliff Booth was, mm-hmm. even though he was the number one suspect and everyone still believes he killed his wife. He's still just a phenomenal friend.
Yeah.
There's one amazing scene where Cliff Booth, who's a stunt double.
Please tell me, Bruce Lee?
Yeah, and he bites him.
Oh my god. Amazing scene.
Great scene.
Mike Moe as Bruce Lee. Great and like scene. There was some controversy of like making like they made Bruce Lee like too stereotypical.
Uh-huh.
But honestly, a young Bruce Lee was
stereotypical.
That.
Yes, he was.
And just phenomenal fight scene. I recommend watching that. Like if you're not going to watch the whole movie, just watch that scene. And so Cliff Booth is making some mess with the hippies. Rick Dalton is chilling in his house, and Sharon Tate is chilling in her house.
But you've illustrated a lot of the previous points we said of what makes Quentin Tarantino such a great storyteller.
Right.
Which is what Daniel said before about the, you know, different points of view, different storylines, ultimately clashing together as
in
one.
In all of our movies. In all of our movies, it's like that.
That's just how he tells stories, and it's the best way to, in my opinion, at least.
I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. I think that the ending of this movie, I'm not going to say what it was. I'm not going to say what happened.
But
it was the most amazing end of a movie I have ever seen.
But you got to, Leave, you got to explain to me one thing. Like, if someone asked you, what is the premise of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, what would you say?
The insides of 1969 Hollywood.
Based on certain characters and real life events.
Are you not allowed to say the historical event? Is it like a spoiler or
we don't want to ruin it.
It is a spoiler, but it's an event. It's an actual historical event. It's not much of a spoiler because
the movie is like revolving around that particular event.
He just loves changing history into his own way, own version of it.
There's no one event. It's the lives of these three people coming into one.
Right.
Yeah.
And he did just such a good job on this movie. I can't even begin to.
So like I think that we could overall say that like Quentin Tarantino is an insane, fantastic, amazing storyteller.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who just has a way of doing it that gives you such an appreciation. And my advice is for the people who are looking for a love for cinema. Mm-hmm. People are looking to see how much work and effort goes into making these movies. Yeah. Watch Quentin Tarantino first.
If you don't,
if you're watching that first, sorry, I'm sorry that like I just jumped ahead there. But if you're watching that first, if you're watching his movies first, you are going to develop an appreciation for cinema, for the way that a movie is put on a screen itself.
Right. Mm-hmm. And if there are people out there who are wondering, like, why do people do podcasts on movies? Why do people spend so much time talking about film?
Yeah.
Watch Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah,
you don't understand
You'll understand why. You can rave about him for hours.
You can do a podcast just on him.
Yeah, there's
like
enough.
Who does that?
Yeah. Has anyone ever done that before?
Probably.
I'm sure. Yeah, you have one of the Beatles.
There's enough Quentin Tarantino.
I'm saying you can make an entire podcast based around Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah, I mean Quentin Tarantino does it. Like
you only have 10 movies though.
Content wise, he brings a lot of his own personal, you know, feelings into his movies. The whole thing with I think it was Kill Bill that he got like second place in the Academy Awards or something.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of like behind Forrest Gump, which by the way in itself is also a fantastic movie, but he had a whole thing like when he was portraying in Inglourious Basterds, in my movie that I said, when he was portraying it, he was like saying like in the movie how the bad guys were the people who are the film critics who were the ones who were saying that his movie wasn't the best. And then he brings it up again at the end of the movie where Brad Pitt's carving the swastika into Hans's forehead. He says, this might just be my masterpiece, which is like a kind of like portrayal. Ando can kind of be a portrayal of Quentin Tarantino himself, someone who's portraying his life's work into his movies.
Yeah. So I'm going to go – I'll start this this little segment. We're going to go around the table. I'm going to start with how many awards were – how many nominations each movie was given. How many nominations it received and how many it won. So Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was nominated for 190 awards.
Holy hell.
And it won 48.
Wow.
Yeah, but were any of them like the Razzies?
I don't know. It just like I looked it up on Google and that's what it said.
I doubt the Razzies.
It's crazy.
Django, according to Wikipedia, was nominated for 111 awards, 129.
So then would be mine, Inglourious Bastards. Nominated for 102 awards and won 49 awards.
All right, one more than me. I'm gonna say my number is gonna seem small to you guys, but keep in mind this was one of his earlier movies.
Yeah.
It was when he was starting out. 23 awards from 48.
That's which, that's if we're talking about ratio.
For the amount that you're nominated for and actually win, that's insane.
No, also you got to keep in mind, like, if he made this movie 20 years later and made the other movies in between, I think it's easy to say that it would have gotten up to 200.
Debatable, 100%. But I'll say, like, if there was an award for best, I was gonna say, like, but from like the consensus, if there was an award for like best cult classic Quentin Tarantino film, it would probably be Pulp Fiction.
Yeah. By the way,
just the screenwriting, the story—it's so original and creative. They didn't have to base it off like events; they just did their own shit, and it was amazing.
Now, each of those numbers was just the movie, not necessarily Tarantino. According to IMDb, Tarantino was nominated for 285 and won 172.
God damn!
Wow!
Wow!
Which is
wild.
I mean, like, for you listeners, just to understand, that is crazy. That is absolutely crazy. That means that it's not just from one perspective. We're not just talking about, oh, the movie was good, so it won a bunch of awards. No. All these awards look at different angles at the movie. We're talking about best actors, best supporting actors, best screenplay, best screenwriter, best director, best producer, and all these things, and they're winning all these types of things.
Yeah.
Absolutely insane.
All of these movies deserve the awards, but a lot of these are political, and honestly, like, a lot of them are crap. At the end of the day, watch these movies, your own opinions.
The
awards are crap. The movies are terrific.
Right.
Watch these movies, form your own opinions. Let us know what you think.
So if you're going to say that the awards are political and can't determine the best Tarantino movies, how about we rate our movies ourselves?
So I don't think we should. This is our opinion-based. It's not really like... You can't really rate these movies.
They're so different, and they're made by the same guy. It's so tough to do that.
Yeah. Okay, listen, I'll agree with you on that one. Quentin Tarantino movies, we're not even going to compare. They're just all so
great. As long as we all agree, he's better than most.
But we definitely want the listeners to tell us what they thought, what their favorite Tarantino film is.
Right. So you can let us know on our social medias. You can let us know on Twitter at _REEL_LIFE_Real_Life_ and on Instagram at REEL_LIFE_PODCAST. Now that is Real Life Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
No uppercases, no spaces, no underscore,
no nothing.
All right, guys. Have a good night.
Have a great night.
Have a Tarantino night.